Laudator Jesus Christus, Vatican and World News.
In the headlines this Saturday, November the 28th, Pope Francis presides over the seventh consistory of his papacy, creating 13 new cardinals. Ethiopian forces launch an offensive to capture the regional capital of Tigray. And as governments ease COVID-19 restrictions over the Christmas holidays, bishops' conferences across the globe put new measures in place that aim to help the faithful share hope. In the Vatican, I'm Linda Bordoni. Pope Francis today is creating 13 new cardinals who hail from across the globe. It's the seventh time Pope Francis has announced a consistory since his election in 2013. Two of the cardinals designate have not been able to travel to Rome for the ceremony because of the COVID-19 and travel concerns. They are the Vicar Apostolic of Brunei, Cardinal Cornelius Sim, and the Archbishop of Capiz in the Philippines, Cardinal Jose Advincula. The two of them are participating in the consistory remotely thanks to digital technology, and they will receive their red hats and rings from a Vatican ambassador at a later date. Because of COVID precautions this year, there will be no courtesy visits, and each cardinal present here in Rome has a 10-person limit for guests. Of the 13 new cardinals, four are over the age of 80 who are joining the college as honorary members, named by the Pope to recognize their lifetime of service to the Church. The other nine are under the age of 80 and eligible to vote in a conclave to eventually choose Pope Francis's successor. As of Saturday, there will be 128 voting age cardinals. Among the new voting age cardinals is the first African-American, Wilton Gregory, the Archbishop of Washington, D.C. In other news, Pope Francis has again reiterated his plea for a peaceful solution to the crisis in Ethiopia that pits the government against liberation activists in the northern Tigray region. His appeal came on Thursday evening in a statement in which the Pope lamented the worsening humanitarian situation in the Horn of Africa nation. Holy See Press Office Director Matteo Bruni said the Holy Father is calling for prayer for this country and appeals to the parties to the conflict to stop the violence, to protect all lives, especially those of civilians, and to restore peace to the people. Meanwhile, as Nathan Morley reports, an offensive is underway by Ethiopian government forces to capture the regional capital Mekele in the north of the country.
The Reuters news agency reported that the leader of the Tigray People's Liberation Front, or TPLF, said that the city was under heavy bombardment. However, a spokesman for the Ethiopian Prime Minister's office said that government forces would not bombard civilian areas. Abiy Ahmed had earlier insisted that his government would protect civilians in Tigray. The UN Secretary-General, Antonio Guterres, has called on both sides to ease tensions and resolve the situation through talks. Abiy, however, has said the military would bring an end to the fighting in the region and remove its leadership, which his government regards as being illegal. As it stands, the Tigray People's Liberation Front, which holds control of the northern region, still refuses to surrender its rule. Over the last few weeks, thousands of people have died and more than 30,000 refugees have fled to neighbouring Sudan. Reports suggest this conflict is already spilling into Eritrea and destabilizing the wider Horn of Africa. So far, more than 43,000 Ethiopian refugees have crossed into eastern Sudan. The UN says the spread of COVID-19 is just one concern at makeshift camps. Meanwhile, access remains a major constraint in the Tigray region. The UNHCR say their staff has no access to the four Eritrean refugee camps due to the current security situation there. For Vatican News, this is Nathan Morley reporting.
And calling for humanitarian attention is also UN Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet, who has asked parties involved in the battle for Tigray to give clear and unambiguous orders to soldiers not to harm civilians. The High Commissioner's appeal this week responded to allegations that militants loyal to the Tigray People's Liberation Front were embedded among civilians. This, she said, did not give the Ethiopian government carte blanche to respond with the use of artillery in densely populated areas. And she reminded all parties to the conflict that the protection of civilians was paramount. According to the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, around 500,000 people remain in Mekele. Here's OCHA spokesman Jens Lerke speaking in Geneva.
We have finalized a humanitarian preparedness plan intended to help 2 million people with assistance in Tigray, Afar and Amhara regions. That includes existing humanitarian caseload that we are already helping and an additional 1.1 million people expected to be in need of assistance as a result of this conflict. To support this plan, about $76 million will still be needed to finance it.
And that was Jens Lerke, spokesperson of the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. In Iran, the president has blamed Israel for the killing of a top nuclear scientist on Friday and said it would not slow down the country's nuclear program. Hassan Rouhani also said Iran would retaliate over Mohsen Fakhrizadeh's killing. The scientist was killed in an ambush on his car by gunmen in the town of Absart, east of the capital, Tehran. Israel has not commented, but it has previously accused him of being behind a covert nuclear weapons program. Fakhrizadeh was Iran's most renowned nuclear scientist who headed the Ministry of Defense's Research and Innovation Organization. Analysts say his killing threatens to escalate tensions over Iran's nuclear program with the US and its close ally Israel. Belarus's president Alexander Lukashenko has hinted he may be prepared to leave power after months of protests against his disputed re-election in August. Stefan Boss tells us more.
Despite colder weather and possible lethal force by security forces, the elderly and the young have united their struggle against the Belarusian leader. Hundreds have been detained in recent days in ongoing protests against President Alexander Lukashenko's re-election in August. Demonstrators do not believe he won the ballot with 80% of the vote. They say he should leave after ruling Belarus for 26 years. Amid the pressure, President Lukashenko suggested that he be willing to step down from his position of power under a new constitution.
Никакую конституцию я под себя не делаю.
He says, I'm not making any new constitution for myself. I will not work with you as president under the new constitution. So stay calm and take this calmly. He promised the new constitution would reduce the power of the president. Parliament is due to discuss the reforms by January next year. But the opposition considers the proposed constitutional changes a delaying tactic to discourage protesters. It would make it more difficult for Lukashenko's main rival, Svetlana Tikhanovskaya. Backed by the opposition, she considers herself the president-elect after the August 9th presidential elections. She recently spoke about her unexpected popularity among voters after her husband was jailed for running against the president.
It was like a sign of love for my husband. I was sure that I will not be registered, and I'm sure that did it just to make love. It will be funny. You're a woman, nobody is going to vote for you, nobody is going to follow you.
But many support Tikhanovskaya and even fight to see her become president. Several leading opposition figures have been detained, while others, like Svetlana Tikhanovskaya, have been forced to go into exile. Belarusian police have also been accused of brutality during the mass rallies in this former Soviet Republic, in which several people died and many more were injured. For Vatican Radio, Vatican News, I am Stefan Bos, reporting.
In Switzerland, voters go to the polls on Sunday to decide on a law that would make Swiss businesses financially and legally liable for human rights violations or environmental damage. The law would affect their supply chains anywhere in the world. Multinational companies source products across the globe, and Switzerland is a world centre for commodity trading, with a third of all commodities consumed worldwide traded by companies based in Switzerland. The new law seeks to enforce standards that ensure that supply chains from start to finish guarantee fair working practices, prevent child labour and environmental damage. It would allow victims of alleged human rights violations or environmental damage to sue Swiss companies in Swiss courts. The UK and the EU will resume face-to-face Brexit trade talks in London this weekend as negotiators race to reach a deal before a looming deadline. This comes after EU chief negotiator Michel Barnier left a period of self-isolation after a colleague tested positive for COVID last week. Ahead of travelling to the UK, he said the same significant divergences persist in negotiations, but also assured he will work with patience and determination. Substantial and important differences remain between the two sides, with just over a month left before a December deadline. And finally, as governments look to easing COVID-19 restrictions over the Christmas holidays, bishops' conferences in a number of countries are putting measures in place for the Advent season that encourage people to share hope. Lydia Kane has more.
This year will be a very different Advent as restrictions remain in place in many countries due to the coronavirus pandemic. Yet, according to the Archbishop of Armagh and Primate of All Ireland, Eamon Martin, perhaps this year more than ever, we need ideas and inspiration to help us delve deeper during our hours of isolation and restriction to find that glimmer of light, that note of joy, that promise of consolation. Ireland will lift its highest level of curbs on Tuesday. Churches will remain open for ceremonies, but restrictive measures will remain in place. Ahead of the beginning of Advent on Sunday, Archbishop Martin is encouraging people to share hope this season. The Primate of All Ireland adds that since the outbreak of the pandemic, the people of Ireland have endured testing times with courage, resilience and compassion. Individuals and communities have made great sacrifices for the protection of life, health and for the common good. The Archbishop underlines that the seasons of Advent and Christmas occur in the depth of winter, reminding us that Christ was born to bring hope to a darkened world. Meanwhile, due to the pandemic, public television programming in Germany will be widely expanded this year during the Advent and Christmas period, both for the celebrations of the Catholic Church and the Protestant Church. Expressing his thanks to broadcasters, Gerhard Fürst, Bishop of Rottenberg-Stuttgart and Chairman of the German Bishops' Conference's Journalistic Commission, said he was very grateful to the broadcasters for their great commitment, despite the difficult conditions. In this way, millions of people can enjoy the atmosphere of Advent and Christmas in their living rooms. In Italy, the Italian Episcopal Conference says it is continuing to monitor the current health situation and is collaborating with the government. The Italian government will ease anti-COVID restrictions in five regions from the first Sunday of Advent. Lombardy, Piedmont and Calabria will be downgraded from red to orange zones, while Sicily and Liguria will drop from the orange to the yellow zone, which has least restrictions. Friday's decision follows a steady decline in hospitalizations from coronavirus in much of Italy over the past week. I'm Lydia O'Kane.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of Vatican and World News. My thanks go to Patrizio Ciprari in studio. In the Vatican, I'm Linda Bordoni. Bye-bye.